Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It is a plain gardening day on the Gulf Coast. Hey, welcome back to the show. A lot of things to think about this week. We got some surprises in store coming up. The temperature this week. It's been a pretty hot week across much of the country. Less abnormally hot in Mobile than in some places, but it's been hot. But you know what's going to happen next week? You know what's going to happen? So it's about Tuesday or Wednesday. Your tomatoes are going to get a break. They're going to love Tuesday and Wednesday. If there's any surviving, if there's a tomato that's surviving, it's going to get, oh man, it's like a second chance. Temperature is down around 70. That's extraordinary. That's extraordinary for us in Mobile. That temperature is that low at night. Usually our temperatures stay in the upper 70s. It's one of the things that makes our seasons distinctive. We're going to be down in the lower 70s, even maybe some of you right around Mobile are probably going to see temperatures in the 60s in the middle of July. That's pretty extraordinary. That's pretty wild. And it's going to last, may last for a little bit of time. It's going to be an interesting thing. You know, I was in North Carolina last week and was there for a lot of reasons. I was there because they asked to give me for me to give a talk. And as I told you, I think I mentioned last week I was going to give a talk on seasons. And I did. And you know, one of the things I said was, you know, I said seasons are really important. You have no idea how important seasons are. But seasons are important only if you understand what seasons are about. What seasons are about. Seasons are a way for us to just digest what climate is. We don't, you know, how do we discuss what's happening, where we are in terms of these changes in temperatures throughout the year, whenever they occur? And if we don't look at where we are, if we don't see each place as having its own seasons, we've missed the point of seasons. Seasons isn't something that we all write music about. It's not something we write poems about, though a lot of people do, I'm sure. It's about helping us digest what's going on in the climate where we are. And so it's very interesting because, you have to talk about climate now, don't you? You just have to. So somebody's going to say, well, gosh, aren't seasons changing? Well, yeah, that may be the point. You know, we talk about 2 degrees centigrade. That's this term you see a lot. That the climate's gonna, that there's a 2 degree centigrade change in climate. And I'll tell you, you can believe in it or you cannot believe in it. It doesn't matter. It's almost all the same because nobody knows what a 2 degree centigrade change means. I don't know. It's like, you might as well tell me about string theory. Let's just talk about string theory here for a minute. You know what string theory is? I don't know what it is. It's something physicists talk about that explains how the universe works. But 2 degrees centigrade doesn't make any sense to me. Seasons make sense to me. And, you know, whatever happens to our climate, whatever happens, and it's had its ups and downs over time, it's going to be... The only way we're going to be able to grasp it and take advantage of it is to understand the seasons. That's why I talk about seasons so much here along the Gulf Coast. And if we break things down by seasons, we begin to understand, you know, how do we take control of it? How do we fix this? One of the seasons we talked about, and it's a season, just like plants have their seasons, just like wildflowers have their seasons, just like trees put on leaves at certain times and drop their leaves at certain times in different places. You know, pathogens, diseases, insects, all of these things that affect the way your garden grows, they have seasons too. And it's important to understand that the seasons aren't the same everywhere. You know, one of the reasons why people up north have certain don't complain about certain diseases and insects we complain about is because it's too cold up there still. And one of the reasons they have diseases and insects that we don't complain about is because it's too hot here in spring. It's funny how all that works. It's very interesting. Some of the most devastating diseases haven't moved north yet. Some of the minor diseases like Dutch elm disease that are only affecting things, they really never moved south. It's kind of a funny thing how all that works. But you know, there's something happening right now that's going to affect you. Thinking about these pathogens, thinking about how we change the world with diseases and insects in ways, we're doing it all the time now. The climate's doing it. We're doing it. We're carrying it on our feet wherever we go. There's lots of diseases we're dealing with in the United States. But one of the interesting things that's going to, it's fascinating to me because it's going to hit people really hard when it happens. They're just not anticipating it. It's called banana fusarium wilt. You love bananas, right? Well, in this past two weeks, there's a record, and it's a big, big thing. It's a big thing. A disease, a wilt of bananas that started out, it's related to Panama disease of bananas, but it's actually a more advanced form of it, had developed in Asia, and it virtually wiped out banana cultivation in Asia. So most of the bananas you're buying now, they're coming from South America and Central America. There's a lot of diseases there that are affecting those bananas, but not this big one. Not this TR4, not this disease, this fusarium that's coming in. But you know what? It didn't take long. It took about 2 years. That disease has now arrived in South America and Central America. It's probably well developed. It's probably totally ensconced. It's going to be very difficult to eradicate. And that means the bananas you've been eating, they aren't going to be available anymore. It's going to take a couple of years before it starts affecting things, but it's now the whole banana crisis. It's on us. And one of the interesting things is that we've sort of been coasting because we thought, gosh, you know, we can clone everything. We can, science is going to figure out a way to do this. We can do gene transfer. We can do, you know, we can clone varieties of bananas. But one of the things we forgot is that we didn't really have the material to fight this disease. It doesn't matter. All the cloning in the world isn't going to help us. All the hybridizing in the world isn't going to help us because we're not able to produce a banana that will be acceptable to Americans that has resistance to this disease. It's going to be a big thing. Your cost of your bananas is definitely going to go up. Probably it'll go up next year, maybe the next year. Yeah, it's a good reason to think about growing bananas in your own yard. We can talk about how to do that. We can get you ready for a banana crop next year. But you know, if you don't understand seasons and if you don't understand how our seasons are different and you don't understand that we're still vulnerable to these diseases just like everybody else, particularly as our seasons change, then we're not even going to be able to do it in our own yard. It's time to pay attention to what we're doing to the world. It's time to pay attention to the diseases we're spreading. Many of them are coming to the U.S., diseases we didn't know. You know, we talked about a disease that's affecting the U.S. called Phytophthora. Sorry for saying that out loud. It's a water mold. One of the interesting things is we talk about losing the chestnuts, this great chestnut forest that once extended throughout the South, even as far south as Baldwin County, certainly in the Red Hills. But it was this disease that we introduced, not Dutch elm, not chestnut blight, but Phytophthora, this water mold, cotton root rot, watermelon root rot, that's had a devastating effect on our forest in multiple ways and certainly had a huge effect on chestnuts. We're introducing other diseases and pathogens now. It's time to start thinking about those and figuring out what to do about them. Give us a call this morning. Let's talk about what ails your yard. Let's talk about what our seasons are. Let's talk about how to understand and protect what we have in our gardens, what we have in our forest, because it's a very special thing. That's what we're going to do this morning, as we're talking about this cool weather that's coming up, this very unseasonal cool spell that we're going to be enjoying next week. What that's going to benefit you, how that's going to benefit your garden. Give us a call. 343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Taxman wrote, yeah, I saw the dogwoods disappear. Are bananas next? Well, it's an interesting story about bananas, and something we'll talk about. Dogwoods are very interesting because, you know, I've seen these diseases that are affecting dogwoods, and they're coming from both directions now in ways that I hadn't anticipated. And it's because the seasons are changing. We lost dogwoods, and I often say we lost dogwoods in part because dogwoods kind of gained a foothold here that they didn't have before briefly. They became more abundant. But, you know, I also think it has a lot to do with night temperatures and how night temperatures changed and how those higher night temperatures made certain diseases more problematic for dogwoods and certainly made dogwoods less resistant to certain diseases. And to understand that, you know, you got to understand seasons. And I think that had a role to play in dogwoods. Now I'll tell you, I'm seeing, it's a really interesting thing. There's some diseases moving from the north that I don't think are ever going to affect us. And people have a terrible misunderstanding. So they buy these dogwood varieties that are disease resistant from Rutgers. Rutgers is where? Up in New York? Or somewhere up there. And listen, they have diseases that aren't our diseases. And so those dogwoods that are resistant to those diseases, they're not going to function down here. We have another set of diseases down here, and it's pushing the dogwood range northward. Even as these other diseases from north are pushing the dogwood range southward, I think we're going to end up with a very, very narrow range for dogwoods, and I think dogwoods are going to become much less common everywhere in North American forest. I didn't think that would happen at one time, but I'm watching it. I'm seeing it. It's another reason to believe that, you know, humans have an impact in terms of the diseases they bring and in terms of the way they may even alter climate. And we're beginning to see some differences here. We're beginning to see some differences. Will the banana be next? Well, that's a harder story to tell, but I guarantee you that banana you're buying in the grocery store, that banana you're buying in the grocery store now, the banana that you're familiar with, it's going to be very expensive very shortly. That's my prediction. You see if I'm not right. And it's going to be harder and harder to find that banana. So does it make sense for us to grow our own? Maybe. But we can mess that up too. Hey, I got a caller. Is that right, Monroe? Is that right? Are you still on the line, Monroe?
To be this old and still alive is a miracle unto itself, Bill.
Well, that's true for all of us.
Well, I got some good news and I got some bad news about things we have talked about.
Yes, sir.
First of all, we're talking about the bananas, and I have always done what you told me as far as cutting back those stalks each year. Well, this year my wife forbid me to do that, so I got some great big old banana plants, but I got nothing coming on them, so hopefully I will cut them back next time and take care of it.
Well, now let me. Here's my advice. My advice is don't cut those bananas back. Don't cut them back. And until spring, and then in spring.
No.
Yeah.
Oh no, I wouldn't do it till then. But
that's, yeah, that's right.
What I remembered
that's
right. was that's when you told me before. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we had, you know, my bananas came on. That's interesting. That do you know what variety of bananas you have?
Lord, I have no idea, Bill. I have no idea.
Yeah, and depending on the variety, it can make a difference. Have you had fruit before, Monroe?
Pardon?
Have you had fruit before pretty well?
For a couple of years, I had small amounts of small fruit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a couple of things, you know. If you do want to reduce competition, that's really important. If it's you want to mulch your bananas really, really well, that makes a lot of difference in how well they perform. Is mulching them real well? I get 4 or 5 bags of leaves and put around the bananas. They love that. And the other thing is they do need some fertilizer. I shouldn't say fertilizer, but they need some grease to make the wheel go. And it doesn't have to be a chemical fertilizer. Cottonseed meal works great, but they need a lot of potassium, too. I actually put ashes from fireplace ashes on my bananas. They love that. In fact, they could probably get by with just that if you're mulching them really well. So I do that a lot, and that really kind of stimulates them to produce a lot of fruit. That extra potassium makes a big difference for bananas, particularly in the form of fireplace ashes. If you don't have that, use a good fertilizer. It can be an organic fertilizer. I think cottonseed meal would probably do just fine if you mulched real well. And a chemical fertilizer like, a chemically derived fertilizer, 13-13-13 would probably be all right on bananas, just fine. But they will need that extra bit of fertilizer and a good bit of water to really produce well. So if you haven't fertilized them in a while, that may be why you're not seeing a lot of fruit.
Okay.
Is that possible?
Well, I can do those things because I always have a lot of ash. And if I know you don't remember, but we've talked about that giant red oak tree in my front yard. And
yeah.
I have plenty of leaves to mulch it with.
So that's perfect. So mulch that this year, yeah. And it should do better next year, yeah.
And cut them back in the early spring.
Cut them back in early spring. You know, what I say is, here's the thing. What you really want to do is pick the banana that is about 7 feet tall. Not the tall ones, not the really tall ones, not the really, really short ones, but the one that's, about head high. That the leaves are emerging just about the level of your nose and your eyes, okay? And where the stalk is, those are the ones that are going to produce the best bananas in my experience. And those are the ones you want to save. You can get bananas from the taller ones, but they tend to be small crops and the bananas aren't as good. I can go into all the details why. But if you pick those about 6.5 feet tall, I think you'll do better. And leave 2 or 3 of those. And then take the rest of them so that it doesn't compete with those. And if you've fertilized and mulched and they've gotten good water consistently, you should produce bananas really well. My bet is you'll actually end up producing some bananas. And it's not too late. If you get a flower that's emerging here in late July, if a flower starts emerging in late July, those bananas will probably be edible. Flowers that emerge in September, it's a little late. But July and August, that's good. You could end up with some good bananas this year.
Okay. Well, I'm pretty sure, even though I don't know the variety, it is they are very, very tall plants. So that may have something to do with it.
Yeah,
but,
and if you've got, if you, yeah, okay.
Let me tell you about my fig tree that we've talked
yes,
about.
Yes, sir.
That big old that tree over the last 2-3 years has grown tremendously. And last year, for the first time, it produced a lot of fruit. But the fruit was kind of white figs, and they were not them good old sweet purple-looking ones that I grew up with in South Georgia.
Right.
So, this year, that tree is now producing a whole lot of figs, but all the leaves are falling off the tree already. Wonder why that would be.
Well, yeah, so that it means that every year, and it probably won't affect the fig crop too much. Every year, usually in, so here's very interesting. So you brought up an interesting point. Usually by late July, people start having defoliation of their figs in Mobile. It's because the humidity remains high, the conditions remain just right. Here along the Gulf Coast, it's probably less a problem in the interior part of South Georgia. It's less a problem as you move north. But our seasons are a little distinctive. And what happens is, because it rains every day in July, because it rains so much, and because the night temperatures are so high, we get this foliar diseases. It doesn't usually hurt the figs for a lot of reasons. I mean, it probably slows them down, but that's a good thing. It usually doesn't hurt fruit production. Usually that happens after the figs are ripe. This year, and so nobody pays any attention because they've already picked the figs. This year it's happening because the figs are ripening later than usual. For a lot of people, I've heard this over and over and over again. God, you know, aren't the figs a little late? And I think they are a little late this year. I will be interested to know if you think it affects, it should not affect the production of figs, however. So I think you're okay. There's no good way to control that leaf disease. It's a rust. It happens every year, virtually every year here along the Gulf Coast to every fig. Hold on. We got to take a break. I'll come back and we'll double check to make sure everything's okay.
Bella, she's my pizza pie with lots of mozzarella. With Guguza, I want to be. Cause Guguza is so crazy over me.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yeah, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. We talked about rainfall, and it's been a weird year for rainfall, too. Monroe's on with us. We've been talking about his figs. His figs were defoliating. Most likely, I'm suspecting, because of excess rain. But Keith in Agricola is reminding me that his figs were defoliating because of lack of rain. And it's very spotty, the rain this year. So it's very unusual because there are areas that have had 200%, 300% in excess of normal, next to areas that are down 10 to 15% of normal. So they've really lost a lot. They're only getting 15% of their normal rainfall, 20% of their normal rainfall. Agricola is in one of those areas. And so Gulf Shores has been particularly bad, too, I think, and some areas in the Florida Panhandle. Hattiesburg is just sopping wet. Parts of Mobile are sopping wet this year, but it's very spotty. So we kind of have to talk about that. It's a big problem. So, Monroe, so we were talking about your figs. Is this making sense about this rust? Did you see the rust on the leaves? Did the leaves kind of get spotty red spots all over them?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's this fig rust, and Taxman, listen, Taxman's worried about it because we've had rust on daylilies. There's rust that affects lots of plants. These are different rusts. We give them the name rusts, and sometimes they're related and sometimes they're not. But the fig rust is something we've had for a long time. I can tell you that ever since I've been paying attention for almost 20 years, for more than 20 years now, 25 years, this rust tends to get our figs in July. It usually doesn't affect production, however. And I'll go into that. Monroe, are you okay with this? Are we all right?
Oh, yeah. That gives me good info, so I'm not all right. worried about it.
Yeah, so mulch those figs good. Don't fertilize them. The rust may actually make it easier to manage the figs. I know that sounds crazy, but I'll tell you why in just a minute. But I think it does. I think it makes it a little bit easier. Thanks, Monroe.
Hey, okay, Charlie. Thank you. Wow.
Yeah, Charlie, we got John. I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, I've got some brown spots in my yard. I sent you a picture. Hoping maybe you could look at them and help me figure it out.
All right. Hey, John, when did you send me that picture?
About 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, it hadn't shown up yet, but as soon as it does, I'll take a look at it. Let's talk about what you're seeing. So you got some brown spots. What kind of yard, what kind of grass have you got?
Bermuda, I believe.
Bermuda. I'm sorry, my bad pronunciation of Bermuda. That's unusual that you would have Bermuda.
And I don't actually know that. I bought the house with whatever's there.
Yeah, it's probably centipede. Okay. It's probably centipede. There's a lot of different things that can cause spots in your yard. Did these develop recently?
I've have struggled with them for the last 3 years, but they come and go. But this year they're coming a lot.
Yeah,
not going away.
Yeah, and how has the rain been in your yard this year?
I would say less than normal.
Yeah, so. It could be a lot of different things. Could be various molds. Could be. It's going to be really hard to tell. It could even be. It's not going to be chinch bugs if it's centipede. Tell me about your mowing regime.
I try to mow it not real short. You know, somewhere around a level two on the lawnmower. Maybe a half inch, three quarters of an inch, something like that.
Yeah, so here's the thing. Here's what I would, first thing I can suggest is, if it's centipede is very susceptible to a lot of problems that you can't fix. I mean, you could try, but it's just very hard. And so the one thing you can do for any grass is to manage that height in the best way possible. Let me stress something. The height of grass, the plant's ability to feed itself is entirely the result of the amount of leaf that the grass produces. So when a grass has 3 inches of leaf, or when it has 1 inch of leaf, it can produce effectively it produces three times more food for itself at 3 inches than it does at 1 inches. Not quite, but close. And because plants manufacture their own food, and we're not doing grass a favor by cutting it. Actually, we sometimes, the grass itself doesn't benefit, but so you gotta compromise. So the way we compromise with centipede, and I'm going to assume that what you have is centipede. If you send me your picture and I can see the details of the grass, I might say otherwise, but I'm pretty sure it's centipede.
Okay.
Is I start out at about, it's fine to mow it at 1.5 inches high in spring. But when summer gets here, you need to mow it at 2.5 inches or three inches. And that's gonna help you a whole lot. Will it solve all the problems that centipede has? No, because centipede is very susceptible to a lot of diseases. It was designed as a grass that's cheap and easy to grow, and it well in bad conditions, And it is, it is cheap, and it is easy to grow in a field, but it does not grow well in most people's yards. So I would say raising that mower height will help. We would have to, we'd have to think carefully about what those brown patches are. I'm going to look for a picture, for this picture to come across. Send me some details around the edges of that, of those patches too, so I can see what kind of grass you have. And then call me back next week once I've seen those pictures. I think maybe the pictures were too big and they haven't come through, but let's look at them again next week.
I will. Let me ask one more question. I'm thinking about hiring a service to spray, you know, and fertilize and all that. And is that a reasonable thought process? Is that needed here?
Well, probably not. Here's the thing about centipede. Centipede was designed to be a low fertilizer grass. And in fact, centipede is very sensitive to high fertilization rates. So if you're fertilizing your centipede with lots of nitrogen, you're actually creating problems for that grass. Now, some grass experts may know this, and they may be very careful about putting fertilizer on centipede. But generally, centipede does not need a lot of fertilizer. It needs only a little bit of fertilizer. And really, most centipede yards can get by with no fertilizer, and they do. But it's not going to be a fertilization problem, I can guarantee you, unless you're over-fertilizing. If you're over-fertilizing, then you got a problem. It may be, so you're probably just fine. It's not over-fertilized. So, and bringing in a lawn care expert just to fertilize would be a mistake, because that's not going to improve centipede. You can add iron, and that may help to darken it up a little bit, but it's not going to make it healthier. So, let's look at those pictures next week. Let's try to see if we can discern what that is, and then we'll talk again about that, okay?
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Charlie, do we have another caller? Good. Let me follow up here just a second. 'Cause it's very interesting. So I've had to do a little bit of traveling this year. I just want to say I had to do a little bit of traveling. I had to go to North Carolina. Told you about that. Good thing. I have to spend a little bit of time in North Alabama. But let me tell you, my yard, my St. Augustine grass was as happy as it has ever been. It was as full and green and luscious and trouble-free as I could ever imagine St. Augustine being. And I hadn't mowed the thing in 3 weeks, 4 weeks. It was tall. That's no question. It was tall. But it looked good. It looked good. Tony said, Tony on Fowl River said, he says he mows his St. Augustine at 4 inches. It's made a huge difference. Now, you can't do that with every grass. You certainly can't do that with centipede. You probably can't do it with most zoysias. You can do it with some zoysias. But grass, there is nothing. Cutting grass doesn't make grass happy. It just doesn't. The reason we mow is to stop the weeds. Once you understand that the benefit to the grass in mowing is that it stops the weeds that would get taller than the grass. That is the primary benefit to grass from mowing. And there's lots of ways you can do that. And in fact, if you skip mowing for 4 weeks, your grass is going to be perfectly happy, and it probably won't have too many weeds that get taller than it if you've got something like St. Augustine. Now, when you come back at the end of that 4 week period, you got to be very careful, because if you cut that grass too low, if it's 5 inches tall and you cut it back to 3 inches, that's a huge percentage of the grass blade you're losing, and it can stress the grass. And so if it's a dry conditions, if it's a drought condition, that could be a problem. But, you know, the honest to goodness truth, I think you could mow your grass, if our aesthetic would allow it, if we could mow the grass about once every 4 weeks and allow it to get 6 inches tall, St. Augustine would probably be much happier. That's the weird part. Hey, we're gonna be back here in just a minute, talk a little bit more about grass and other things. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Along about 1825, I left Tennessee very much alive. And I never would have got through the Arkansas mud if I hadn't been a-ruddin' that Tennessee stud. I had some trouble with my sweetheart's paw, and one of her brothers was a bad outlaw. I sent her a letter by my Uncle Foot, then I rode away on the Tennessee stud. The Tennessee stud was long and lean, the color of the sun, and his eyes were green. He had the nerve and he had the blood, and there never was a horse like the Tennessee stud.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Okay, we just let some things pass without comment. There he is. Listen, fig rust. Let's talk about it just a minute. I want to get back to that. It is a disease that's really only a problem in humid areas. And I told you, fig rust may actually be good for your fig production. And let me tell you why. Or for the fact that you fig rust may actually help you to eat more figs. Here's why. A lot of us have a hard time pruning figs, and figs can grow aggressively. If they're happy in this climate, figs can grow aggressively. And they get big trunks, and those big trunks have figs way up in the top where only the mockingbirds can get to them. Right? Ain't that what's happening in your yard if you got a big fig? You tell me what the percentage of figs that you pick compared to what the mockingbird eats. Actually, one of the problems in our climate, we need figs to be healthy, and I've seen a lot of figs that aren't healthy. To make a fig healthy, mulch it. Don't fertilize it, just mulch it. Put lots of leaves around that fig as far out as you possibly can. And I'm not talking about these little dainty little 12-inch little mulch things around the fig. I'm talking about mulch that fig out where the roots are. The roots are going to be 12 feet away from the tree. You're not going to do that. You're not that bold. But put your mulch out about, 4 feet, 5 feet, 6 feet away from the fig. It will make a ton of difference in how that well that fig performs. I'm talking about a 12-foot circle around your fig. Makes a ton of difference. Just pile it on there. They'll love it. But here's the that works for a lot of reasons. But beyond that, you don't want to fertilize a fig because it'll get too tall too quick. And so our problem is, how do we control the height? If you're pruning, can be very difficult. And sometimes you have to prune excessively because figs grow so much in our climate. But actually, that fig rust actually slows growth down. The fig always recovers from it. I've never seen any problem. It has never affected production the next year, as nearly as I can tell. It's not an issue. You can't control it. You just can't. But it slows the growth of that fig down, and it ain't such a bad thing, this rust. It's okay. It's okay having this rust. It's all right. So then we got to go back to this grass thing, because I just said something crazy. I just said that I didn't mow my grass for a long time. And my St. Augustine, it was so incredibly happy. It was so incredibly happy. There's a couple of reasons, and I'm going to be fair. There's a couple of reasons why that St. Augustine did so well. The first one is that we actually didn't have as saturated soil conditions as much as we usually do in my yard this spring. We had some periods of time that it stayed relatively dry. The water table was not excessively high. This can be a big problem. And I think that in itself helped. Actually, this is a lesson to us about these irrigation systems. These irrigation systems and other things, they can cause problems. I didn't water. I never water my lawn. Never. I mean, I just never water it. Whatever happens, happens. I just got to be honest. Water is a valuable commodity to me. My time's a valuable commodity to me, and I ain't going to spend time watering the dead gum lawn unless I'm putting something new in, and we can talk about that. If you've got a new lawn, you'll have to water it, and I would too if I had a new lawn. But when it's well established, I'm not spending a lot of time watering it. But here's the thing, that the lack of excess water and the fact that I didn't mow that St. Augustine made that St. Augustine about as lush as I've ever seen it. It was so incredibly happy. There was nothing I could have done to make it happier. Didn't fertilize it, didn't. It just was it everything it needed to produce the food that grass needs. The leaf blades were there, and it was lush. It was great. Now, you can't do that with every grass, I recognize. Mostly we have St. Augustine and centipedes. A few of you might have some of the new types of zoysias. Some of you have the old types of zoysias. That's another story. Centipede's difficult. It's not going to respond as well as St. Augustine to high growth, but it will respond. I recommend cutting centipede low in spring. There's no question. Do it right up through April and May when we first begin to get the droughts. When we get a 10-day dry spell in April or May, which we will do, then let your centipede get some height on it. It will make a ton of difference. And you can, one of the things I tell you to do is, if you're cutting it an inch and a half when you first get started in March and April, in May, raise your mower by a half inch. In June, raise it by another half inch. Okay? See where we are? We're 2.5 inches. And you might even, in July, you might even let it go 3 inches high. And then as it cools off in October, you can drop it again and drop it again if you like. Now, here's the interesting thing. That will make a ton of difference in competition with weeds. It just will make a ton of difference. It'll give the grass a lot more strength. It will give it more ability to resist attacks from nematodes and other things. In my experience, it does not make it more susceptible to any kind of fungal diseases. Those are going to occur anyway, regardless. But it really gives more strength to the roots, and that's where centipede has a lot of problems. It has a very poor root system. It has a very poorly developed root system, and it is very susceptible, particularly in our sandy soils, very susceptible to nematodes and other diseases. So it needs as much strength as it can get. And the only way it can manufacture that strength, it can't do it by nitrogen, it can't do it by adding something. It can only increase its strength by improving its photosynthesis, by improving its ability to turn sunlight into carbohydrates, which is how plants feed themselves. Adding organic matter to a centipede lawn can help a lot. That means you want to let your leaves fall where they are. When you mulch, don't bag them. Let them fall where they may. Adding a little bit each year, and maybe multiple times a year, add a little quarter inch of organic matter in the form, or half inch of organic matter in the form of pine bark. Just spread it evenly across the top of that lawn. It can help a lot, and it helps because it helps to build that root system, to create a high organic area where there's plenty of oxygen and where nematodes aren't going to be as big a problem. Just trust me. Just do it. A little bit of organic matter, that can make a ton of difference. Spread it evenly, not sand, but organic matter in the form. If you've got mulched up leaves are great. In fact, if you've got a tree, it's falling. If you'll just take those leaves, mulch them all up, and spread them evenly across the lawn. Don't clump them up. Just spread them evenly. That'll make a big difference too for your centipede. And it happens for a lot of reasons. But remember that it's the grass blades that feed the plant. And so when we mow, we have to be very careful because we need that plant to continue to be able to feed itself. There are lots of ways of approaching that, but there it is. That's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm thinking. Hey, we're fixing to take a big break, right? We got a big break coming up here on the hour. We got some news coming up. We'll be back.
Sugar Magnolia blossoms bloom. That's all there.